What is up, everybody, and welcome back to Hustle Cannabis, where we talk all things marijuana related, especially the progression of the legal cannabis industry. I know it's been a pretty long time since I've made one of these, but I'm getting back to it. We are here today with a very special guest, Gustavo Camargo, the production manager of Souls Green. You want to give yourself a little intro?
Yeah. 1, 2, 1, 2. It's your boy, Gustavo. And I'm pretty excited to be here with my boy, Chris. Me and Chris have been hanging out for quite some time now while he's been here in Oregon, and I'm super excited to be on this podcast. So thanks for having me on here.
Of course, man. We've been talking about this for a while, too. It's pretty funny because me and Gustavo are actually working, or we worked for the same company, all right, technically on the same property. So the company that I used to work for, Primo Farms, was partnering with Souls Green, and we were essentially leasing out their property, and we had about 2,000 plants total, if you guys remember the earlier podcasts. And now Souls Green and Primo are kind of doing their own thing, but it was on the same exact plot of land that I was on when I first started. So that's pretty funny. How's it been working there since I've left? I mean, we weren't working there at the same time, but how's it been?
It's been pretty great. Nothing but progression, and the crop is looking really, really good. So we're pretty excited, and all the new products that are coming out are looking super amazing. So pretty exciting times right now, honestly.
Nice. Are you guys still running like 2,000 plants, 1,500, or about how big is it, the grow right now?
It's about that size, yeah, still. So it's pretty good.
Cool.
Yeah.
That's dope, man. How did you get involved with Hong? Hong is the owner of Souls Green.
Well, it's actually pretty interesting. I was just getting done working at this other farm, and I needed another job. And so basically I look on a Craigslist, and I responded to a handful of these Craigslist ads, and I happened to see the one for Souls Green, and I just applied to it, and then I got a call, and I had an interview, and then I sat down and got started, you know, the next day, and then it just went from there.
That's awesome. So this is your first job in the cannabis industry, though?
This is the second one. This is actually my third one, actually, yeah.
Oh, damn. So let's hear a little bit about how you started and those first two jobs.
Basically, in the first one, I started at the biggest one in Southern Oregon. It's called Urban Farms, and I was literally only there for about 2 weeks because I started there, and then they were having these the cuts there, and I hadn't had enough experience there to actually like see that I was good and stuff. Yeah. So got the cut. And then the second job, I was there for a while, but then you know, the company ran out of funding because a lot of these farms just run out of like funding and stuff.
Oh man, that's tough. Yeah, a lot of these, you know, farms just got started by people that didn't know what they were doing. And just thought it was an easy thing to, you know, easy way to make money, and they learned very quickly that's not the case.
Exactly. And well, that's the kind of company I worked with, and basically they ran out of funding to pay their employees, and so I needed another job, and then, you know, what happened, Souls Green happened to call me back, so I was pretty excited for that.
And then you didn't start off as a manager, did you?
No.
What did you start off as?
I just started rolling as just rolling joints.
Oh, that's what's up. Were you guys using the knockers?
Yeah, the ones that you just have to bang and you get like a handful of joints.
Yeah. I think I was using probably the same devices when I was with Chris and them.
Yeah.
Who was my growing mentor. So then how long did it take for you to advance to a manager or actually working with the crops and all that?
It was actually literally within like less than a month, because the people who you were working with actually ended up not having to work out their partnership with Hong.
Yeah.
And so like they ended up leaving, and so they needed someone who was like in a manager position, I guess. And I was just like a little bit more mature than the other person who was also there.
Okay.
And so I just happened to fill into that role perfectly.
Nice. And like, so what did the responsibilities entail from getting a promotion like that? Like, how did it change? I know you were just rolling joints before, but what does being a manager, production manager entail?
Basically, learning what it is that I had to get done in a certain day and doing it within that certain day and making sure that it got done. And
so then, essentially, the responsibility of growing the plants fell to you?
Basically, yeah.
Okay, and who was above you? Like, was it just Hong, or did you have...
When I started there, it was Chris and it was Jeff who was above me. And then once
that's
they
so
left...
funny. That's who I worked with. That's crazy.
Yeah, once they left, there was a spot that needed to be filled, and I just happened to be in there, so...
Nice.
Got the job.
That's awesome, man. Good stuff. So where do you plan on going in the future, as far as, are you like, I know you want to stay with Souls Green. You mentioned that you got another position or another responsibility.
Yeah, so I just basically took over the social media account for Souls Green on Instagram, and right there is like really where my niche is, because in my own personal Instagram, I'm trying to actually like inspire people to actually grow themselves. Mm-hmm. And so with Souls Green's Instagram, I kind of want to do the same to, I guess, motivate others as well, but also give a positivity message in the post that I make there as well.
Yeah. Yeah, I know you got like what, 4,000 or 5,000 followers on your personal? That's pretty solid. That's good. So I can imagine you growing Souls Greens pretty quick. Last time I checked, they had like 300 or something like that, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so Hong's going to appreciate that.
Definitely, definitely.
And then, so besides Souls Green, what are like the long-term goals that you're looking to achieve? As far as, do you want to stay in the cannabis industry? Do you want to like keep moving up, etc.?
Definitely. Well, I have a big part in the cannabis industry in terms of like what it's going to do for me. Not just the, you know, working with like the THC, but the CBD as well.
Yeah, that's huge.
Yeah, CBD, farming that, and then, you know, obviously the fibers in the
hemp plant.
In the hemp plant are versatile, and just that's where I see a lot of the potential at right now. The THC, you know, obviously still has like a lot of potential in it right now, but I definitely see a lot
leaning towards the CBD side of things,
or CBD hemp, and hemp, and the fibers. Long term. Exactly.
Dude, the amount of things that you can do with hemp is ridiculous. I mean, everybody talks about it, but there's like over 100 uses, you know, plastics, fuel, all that kind of cool shit. So definitely exciting times to be alive.
Definitely.
So being that you are a manager, what would you like to see in an employee? Because a lot of the people that listen to Hustle Cannabis, you know, want to get in the cannabis industry or in the process of getting into the cannabis industry. What would you tell the people that are in that position?
Basically, just show up on time and just do what you have to do to get done. Obviously, you know, that's the simple answer, right?
Yeah, that is. But, I mean, it is true, especially when you're just starting.
I mean,
what about, like, what can they do to prepare as far as knowledge and things like that go?
Basically, I know how to roll a joint, really. Know how to have good communication skills. Mm-hmm. Super key. A good attitude and able to work well with others. Like, that's a super cool thing. Right now, the thing we're focusing on is working well with others. Like, not just I see you at the same place that we work at and we just wave hi to each other. It's more like we actually communicate with each other.
Like building a team.
Exactly. It's part of a team. And that's what was super cool is once I was working in there, it wasn't just like, you know, Hong was my boss and all that. It was more like she wanted my opinion, she wanted my feedback, and it was like I felt like part of something bigger.
She's really cool like that. You know, she wants to include everybody's opinion into what we should do or how the company should move forward. She respects, you know, even like the lowest person, whatever, joint roller, trimmer, to, you know, the higher up in the company. She takes everybody's opinions very well. But yeah, man, that's awesome. I kind of miss working there, to be honest with you.
Honestly, yeah, it's pretty awesome still.
I miss being in the field. That's one thing, is like just having a job outdoors in the sun is nice. But even when you're working with cannabis, it's a whole nother story.
Right. No doubt. That's where I'm at right now, and, you know, it's pretty a lot of fun right now.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. So, like, what sparked your interest in cannabis to begin with? What made you say, hey, I want to, you know, join this industry? Well, were you always smoking?
Yeah, kind of. It was, I started in, like, high school, but that's really when I got introduced to, like, smoking and everything. But what in the job-wise, as far as that goes, it was literally just kind of, you know, I don't have any other skills to actually, like, you know, do something that's going to pay me a lot, and you know, growing and trimming and, you know, all that were like the higher paying jobs around here in Southern Oregon, and so I wanted to get into that. And it was just like literally going online, taking the OLCC test, and literally had the OLCC handbook open and the test right next to it. You can literally do that in less than 15 minutes.
It's so true.
People drag it on for like weeks or whatever, and it's just literally 15 minutes.
Hell yeah. Well, closer, man. But yeah, no, I remember taking it. I was like, dude, this is all you need. Right? Is all you need to get a job.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously the companies themselves are going to want a little bit more. Like we were talking about the qualities to get a job before, as far as, you know, employees go. That's for entry level positions, just so you guys understand that. You know, there's a lot more that you'll need if you want to, you know, get to a manager position or head grower. But essentially, are you doing the same job as a head grower right now? Like, are you in charge of nutrients and all that, or does, like, somebody else handle that within the company?
That's someone else who also handles that, and he comes in and does that as well. He mixes, like, the teas that we were, like, talking about and
stuff.
Yeah,
I was going to ask you, like, mixing the tea. If any of you don't know, tea is essentially a mix of nutrients that you give to the plants. But anyway.
It smells really bad.
Yeah, it does smell really bad. It's, like, guano, all kinds of fish horrible guts. Shit. Fish guts. It
smells horrible.
Yeah, but it's good. It's good for the plants.
Yeah, they love it. I don't know why.
Wait, who's the guy that comes in and does the tea?
We got this guy, Ricky. He's a big time grower, I guess, in LA.
And so shout out.
Yeah, shout out to LA growers.
Nice. That's awesome, man. So you said you started smoking in high school. Do you see any harm in it? I mean, obviously you're in the industry, so you don't, but what was it like, you know, starting? Are your parents strict about it? How do your parents view you working in the industry? How old are you?
I'm 22.
Yeah, so 22. Young ass guy, you know, I'm about to turn 25, so I'm not, you know, that old, but still, 22 in a manager position is pretty solid. But yeah, what did your parents think about it when you were talking about getting into it and when you first started smoking?
I mean, when I first started smoking, that was in the high school, and you know how that goes.
Yeah, pretty much.
In my culture, because I'm Mexican, it's like basically you're doing meth and it's like you're just zoning. It was like horrible. It was like at that time, it seemed like to me like a good idea, but like to my parents, they did not like it at all. So it was kind of like I had to keep it like hidden because I still wanted to do this and I still wanted to hang out with my friends who had it available to them. And yeah, I couldn't come home smelling like it and everything, and they couldn't be acting stupid and shit, and you know, just looking like blazed. And so a lot of the times I was like paranoid, but you know, at the same time I was having a good time because I was just, you know, high, obviously.
Yeah.
So that's how that was in high school. And you know, it was in high school, it was actually, you know, pretty good as far as, you know, like you said, it doesn't do harm. I would say like it definitely affects your learning ability, like obviously because you hear like you can't learn language, you can't learn math.
You mean like while you're high or?
Yeah, while you're high.
Yeah.
Affects that type of, I guess that type of area in the brain.
Mm-hmm.
To keep you from learning stuff like that, and I could definitely notice that.
Yeah, I can't do math when I'm high.
Yeah.
Some people can. Some people find it easier, but I cannot.
Exactly. Yeah. Learning a language. I was learning German, so I know English, I know Spanish, but I was learning German at the time.
Damn.
And so like even that was
trilingual.
Hard. Trilingual. Right, but so I mean, for people who are like young, I would say in high school, I would say that's probably not the best idea because you definitely need to be focused in the classroom. And I know a lot of people have like ADD and they can't focus as it is.
I agree.
And so, but after I grew up a little bit more and everything, I started to get the hang of it. I started to get like to be able to like know this is a certain time of when I can smoke, this is a time when I can't smoke, and these are the things I need to get done before I smoke. So I had to set myself up to be able to smoke, almost like a reward, honestly.
Yeah, no, see, that's kind of how I was too. I didn't even like being high in school. Obviously, I've tried it a bunch of times, but I didn't enjoy sitting in the classroom high. And I was more on the paranoid side. Same. And just like I thought everybody thought I was high, thought the teacher knew. And yeah, uncomfortable situation in general. So all the kids in high school out there, I can't say smoke weed, but if you're gonna smoke weed, wait until after school.
Honestly.
That sounds so bad.
Yeah, I know, honestly.
Don't smoke weed.
Don't smoke weed.
Until you're 18 medically or 21 recreationally.
Exactly. Definitely could have saved myself a lot of assignments I missed, detentions I got, and then a lot of funny looks that I got from other people.
Yep.
Definitely, because I'm like, they know. And then eventually everyone starts knowing you as, like, you know, that guy.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
I feel like, was it different in Oregon as to where it was more accepted because it's kind of part of the culture out here? Or was it still, like, a stigma in high school? Like, oh, that's a stoner kid sort of thing.
It was a little of both because it was almost, like, expected from certain people.
Uh-huh.
And then at the same time, it's, like, not a big deal for, like, the A-plus students. Like, they goody-goodies. I feel like, you know, they would look down on it, obviously. But everyone else was just kind of, you know, normalized to it, really, because it's like one of the biggest crops here in Oregon.
Yeah, exactly. So, it's huge out here. Southern Oregon, Northern California, Emerald Triangle, you know, right. Essentially we're at the tip of the Emerald Triangle now, and it keeps moving up. So
exactly,
cool stuff. Nice state to grow up in.
Definitely.
Especially if you like cannabis.
No, definitely. You drive like literally down, you know, so many, you know, these in rows, and you can literally smell the weed as you drive by.
I know,
and it's super awesome.
That's one of the best things to do is just cruise around like Ashland,
right?
You know, in the back areas. So you work in Eagle Point, right? That's where her property is. Okay, man, I used to love driving out there.
Oh
that
yeah,
that was the best, dude. Just driving through the hills and shit.
Yeah,
God, it was like a 30-minute drive, but it's kind of nice.
No, same. I have like, you know, my Honda, and it's like a race car basically. Like, I gotta drive it going as fast as I can all the way down there. I keep my eyes open for the state troopers, but I mean, you know,
oh yeah,
super fun driving in the hills and, you know, just open roads.
The good old days, man. It's funny, that's where it all started for me. And now you're there. That's crazy. All
right.
It's kind of like full circle a bit.
Full circle.
Damn. So when you were growing up, you kind of saw the progression of the cannabis industry out here in Oregon, right? So
right.
It, like, started off, was it illegal when you were really young, or was it medical for the most part?
Like, I'm pretty sure it was medical, really.
Okay. So it's been, I don't really remember. I should know this. I don't remember when it went right. Medical in Oregon, though. But yeah, it's been a while.
Yeah.
Right?
I just remember driving down my street one day, and then I just noticed all of these dispensaries, like, literally right next to each other.
Shit.
And I'm like, geez, 1, 2, 3, 4, I don't know, 5 for sure. That on Riverside, on like on Main, on the streets here, there's definitely 5, like, on the same street.
No doubt.
Next to each other.
I mean, so when it was medical, there weren't as many dispensaries, though, right? Because now there's got to be at least 20 in Medford alone.
Yep.
It's insane. There's no laws, really. Well, there are some, but there's not many laws preventing it from saturation.
Exactly.
But when it was medical, like, how many were there compared to now?
There was really, like, you know, two or three, honestly. And there wasn't that many anywhere else. I mean, there was still glass shops, but...
Okay.
Yeah.
So people were always buying from dealers back then still. Basically, it was like the normal, yeah. Like the good old days.
You couldn't get away from it, really.
So let's talk prices then. I know, I mean, now, God, the price has shot down so much. I remember when I was working at another spot out here, one time we bought a pound for $300. $300 of like some mid to, I wouldn't say high grade, but almost, you know, it was definitely some solid mids for $300, dude. That used to go for $2,800 to $3,500 in New Jersey. Jeez. Back in the day. So do you know what the prices were growing up? Did you ever deal? Like, I mean, I kind of grew up in that game a bit. But do you know like what the prices were for ounces and stuff like that?
It was like $100 per ounce or $120 per ounce.
That's so different. See, I can't even relate because I'm on the East Coast. It's a totally different ballgame.
Really?
Yeah. But, and so now, I guess that's black market. But now, how much can you get an ounce for in a dispensary out here?
Dude, I don't even know, honestly.
Yeah, see, when you work in the industry, you just get shit for free. So. Yeah. Oh, man, that's funny. But, yeah, so you were talking about, to backtrack a little bit, you were talking about your parents and what they thought about it.
Right.
When you started smoking, but what about now that you're in the industry? Are they kind of like respectful or?
Yeah, you know, honestly, it was like I told them I needed a job, and I told them, you know, this is the job that I found, this is how much they pay, and it's really easy for me to get a job. Like, you know, I'm going to make this happen, it's going to work out for me, and, you know, obviously they couldn't say anything, so it was like, boom.
You're doing something.
Yeah, I'm doing something. I'm 21 now, and it's like, you know, letting them know in a friendly way, this is what I'm doing.
That's awesome.
Honestly, as long as it brings like some sort of money, like I'm not like, you know, harming anyone.
And it's legal now.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, you're not breaking the law, and you're bringing in money. So, what really matters?
You know, what was super funny was one of your earlier guests on your podcast was talking about how one of his favorite parts of his job was like,
was it Michael?
Taxes. Yeah,
Michael.
Yeah.
Oh, hey, he does his taxes.
And, you know, he's getting paid for, you know, and the tax area is right next to the jailhouse. And, you know, people are in there for doing what he did, basically, and XP gets paid.
I know. That's awesome, man. I mean, it's fucked up, but it's still awesome now.
And what's cool is, I'm also the courier for, like, Souls Green.
So I wanted to ask you about this.
Yeah. I make the deliveries, and, like, you know, people drive on the I-5 here on the interstate. They traffic, you know, weed, all kinds of drugs up and down it. And, you know, they get caught all the time. But they do it illegally, black market, and then I'm basically doing what they're doing, but I got Metric with me, and it's all legal, and, you know, it's super cool.
God, that's so badass. So how many, like, what's the biggest, so when he says courier, he means he's actually going and selling weed to, say, a dispensary. You said you've been up to Portland before, right?
Yeah.
That's a 4-hour drive away. How much do you normally sell when you go? It just depends, or?
Yeah, it really depends on the stuff. Well, we actually just make the order. We have all the joints. We have all the BHO, all the, you know, stuff that we're bringing to the places that they already ordered. And then I just go and deliver it to them. So it literally could be, you know, these big boxes that have about, I don't know, 1,000, you know, more joints or so.
Yeah. Okay, so you do a lot of pre-rolls.
Yeah, pre-rolls.
And you guys do, like, pounds of flower as well?
Pounds of flower as well, yeah.
What would you say is, like, your most sold product from Souls Green?
The most sold product would be the 3-pack joints.
Nice.
And those are just because they're 3-pack joints, they're half grams, and they're about 24, 25-ish THC.
Nice.
And like in the normally, you know, you get one of those, that's, you know, I don't know, $15, I think, for one of those. And that's a lot, but for the 3-packs, those are pretty good for half grams, and people like those.
That is pretty good, yeah. Honestly, I want to see the packaging nowadays, because I think you showed me the packaging a few months back, right?
Yeah.
It looked pretty good. Is it still that, or...
Yeah, it's still the cardboard boxes for those, and that's super cool. A lot of people like the packaging.
Yeah, I've never seen a 3-pack look like that before.
Yeah, people like the tubes and the corks.
Yeah, I remember she was talking about that when I was there. Was that a year? That was a year ago.
Yeah?
I think it was over a year ago when I was there.
Oh.
It's August now. Yeah. That's crazy. Yeah, she was talking about, like, oh, we got to make it super fancy, and, you know, the glass and the cork, and it's kind of like fine wine.
That's, yeah.
And she executed on that. How about her husband? What was his name?
Pedro.
He's still there, right?
Yeah.
And does he operate anything, or is he just kind of...
Yeah, he prepares the material sometimes. He, you know, makes the labels that we need for the packaging and everything, and just anything around the facility that we need to get, you know, built or repaired. He does it as well.
Okay.
Yeah.
That guy was always really cool.
Yeah, he's still really cool.
And you guys... I just remember when they were installing the vat for the BHO and all that.
That's
obviously up and running now, right?
Yeah.
God, that thing was huge. They can make a lot of BHO in that. A lot of multiple kinds of extracts, really.
Yeah. We got this, I believe this chemist, we showed him some pictures of the machinery, and it was literally, I guess he said it was made for to produce enough for, like, the nation or something.
Yeah.
So it was, like,
she's got a pretty serious lab.
Yeah.
She was a chemist beforehand, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so she knows exactly what she's doing. She can probably make... God. So, do you guys really sell flour, or is it mainly the BHO and the joints?
It's mainly the BHO and the joints, but she, you know, we get a lot of flour and stuff that goes through there as well. So I'll bring up that stuff as well. And then, basically, yeah.
How about strains that you're running right now? Here, come a little bit closer.
Yeah. Strains right now? We actually just got some two new ones. We got one called Sour Tassie.
Okay.
That one's really good.
Never heard of that before.
Chocolate Fondue.
Chocolate Fondue, man, these names.
I know.
That's one thing that I keep realizing is there's really no consistency with the names anymore.
Yeah.
Like, every time you mix, you know, every time you breed a new strain, they put a brand new name on it. It used to be that it was like a combination of
the old names. Yeah.
Now if you keep doing that over and over again, it's not going to stay consistent. So.
Honestly, yeah.
I think that's one thing the cannabis industry needs to figure out is how to classify strains better. Because right now, you know, anybody can put a name on any strain, and it's really hard to tell the difference. But if we get a little more in depth when it comes to like terpenes and like lab testing, I think we could really identify like, oh, this is White Widow. Like this is, I mean, I'm sure there's ways right now, but it's probably really expensive.
Oh yeah,
to identify an exact strain, you know.
Yeah, we were talking a little bit about this, how a lot of these plants that we have nowadays are there just so crossbred. We don't even really know what they actually do, and even the most advanced testing can only determine so much. And that's only recently I was watching a documentary. They have some of the best one overseas, and that's really expensive over there. And so a lot of things that are regulated over there aren't regulated over here. So it's really like just kind of loosely like, this is what this is, and it's supposed to do this kind of a deal. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like you're really just kind of getting whatever you get. And,
yeah, it's difficult, man. And I think as far as, you know, knowing the effects of something right now, I think the extract market and the cartridges, you know, can dial it in a bit better because it's made in a lab. So it's not made in a lab, but it's mixed and everything in a lab. So it's a little less natural, but they can really dial it in with, like, adding terpenes, adding CBD, you know, whatever it may be, different other cannabinoids like CBN. What's another one? It was that we were talking about. It was like CBD. No. It's another one. I can't think of the different cannabinoids right now because I'm high as hell. We hit a dab pen before this, so we started off a little bumpy, but I think we're cruising now.
Yeah.
Actually, let me hit that real quick.
I know, right? And the other strains that we got is also obviously the Rogue River Shiver.
Oh man, that is a classic.
Yep.
That's from Primo, right? Did Primo give you guys those genetics?
Yeah.
Nice.
Rogue River Shiver, and then we got Gelato, we got Pineapple Stout, Pineapple Express, and then I think that's it for that.
Okay, yeah. So speaking of different kinds of strains, you know, different ways to smoke, how do you prefer smoking as an experienced cannabis industry enthusiast? Are you a joint guy? You obviously got your dab pen here.
I obviously love flowers because like the taste and stuff, you know, obviously the joints leave like ashes and stuff, so whenever I'm like in a house or somewhere where I can't like ash anything, I have my pen and stuff.
Okay.
But I'm also like bongs, that's super cool. Blunts are always obviously super amazing,
of course.
But yeah, I would say for convenience, a pen with like wax. I like the ones that you can just throw in your stuff, not with, like, the actual cartridges.
Yeah, it's way better. Dab pens hit way harder.
Yeah.
Those cartridge pens, man, it's hard to really, like, get blazed off of them. Like, they're good for maintenance, but as far as, you know, trying to get actually high, not so good. And one thing I've noticed about cartridge pens is, or cartridges, I should just say, in general, is over time, if you're using the same one, I feel like you develop a tolerance to it. It might not even just be a tolerance. Maybe the wax just gets old inside of it, you know, the CO2 oil, whatever it may be, just gets old. But I feel like it loses potency really quickly, or effectiveness. So dab pens are where it's at, in summary.
Dab pens are where it's at. And then for flower, I use my steamroller as well. But
that thing is crazy.
Right?
I wish I could show this to the podcast, but that's impossible.
Honestly. So. But everyone gives me crap for this, but I love it absolutely. It's the hemp string to actually light the bowls.
Oh, I always use that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, if you're a real connoisseur, you got to use hemp wick, man.
Honestly, makes it so much smoother, way, way better. Now you can't tell the difference.
Yeah, but you just don't feel like you're dying inhaling butane, you know? Because when you think about it, you really look at the physics of what you're doing. It's like you're really just spraying this, you know, fucking flammable fumes into the bowl. And in all reality, like, there's definitely going to be a little bit of that comes into the fucking pipe. You know, when you think about it, like, right before it gets lit and right after, you know, you're done lighting it, you're definitely going to inhale something, so...
I would say if you haven't tried using the hamstring, definitely give that a shot and then tell me what you think.
Yeah. You can tell the difference a bit for sure. And I feel like it just, I don't know, there's something about it. It makes a vibe. It just feels more natural.
Definitely a lot more natural. I love it.
Wait, so explain to them the steamroller. This thing hits like a truck.
Right. The steamroller, basically, if you were to have a bong that's about a foot and you were to take out the bottom and you were just to keep the tube, it would look like that. And it would look like a roll of paper towels, honestly.
Yeah.
You literally hit that and you basically drag the smoke all the way through the steamroller. And then you get it all in one big inhale. And that's basically the smoothest hit you'll ever hit.
Yeah. It does hit smooth if it's greens for sure.
Yeah.
But I feel like there's some times where that shit thrashes my throat.
Yeah, no doubt.
That shit is no joke. Because, I mean, there's no water to filter it. So it's kind of just...
Yeah, watch some like YouTube videos or something on how to hit that correctly, because there's an incorrect way to do that, and it makes it like you feel like you're hitting like a bong with no water.
That's probably what I was doing.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Oh, that's funny, man. And now, do you dab a lot too?
Not really, not that much. I do more, like I said, flower. But yeah. When I have like a pen, I definitely will.
Yeah.
Honestly, just because it makes me more, I guess, like. Out of it sometimes.
Yeah,
I forget.
Anxious and all that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, I used to have a dab pen, and then I hit it like a vape pen, and I'd forget that it was dab pen. So I'd just be like, puff, and I'd be like, oh snap.
Yeah.
And then that first one would hit, and then the second one, and then the third one, like after like increments of 30 minutes.
Just get layered.
Like, gee, what did I do?
Layered into the couch, turns into like a psychedelic trip.
I can't move. Yeah, I get trippy high.
God damn, man. Speaking of tripping, have you ever tried anything else? I know we're on a podcast, but figured I'd throw that out there.
Tried a few things, I could say. You know, high school. Shout out to the high school homies.
Okay, okay.
Yeah, that was pretty interesting. Definitely regret some of the things that I did do.
Uh-huh.
And definitely, I mean, pretty happy with the ones that I did, some of the ones that I did do. You get to learn a lot and experience different things.
Yep.
And I feel like, you know, it went down kind of bad, but it's like, you know, don't hit until you try it. Like, obviously, you know, some of those strong ones are like, really, don't ever try those at all.
Yeah, definitely.
But like...
I feel like psychedelics and other hard drugs should be classified differently, you know?
Yeah.
It's not like you want to, when you take acid or say shrooms, you don't want to wake up the next day and be like, oh, let's take more. Like,
yeah, like an, never. Like an everyday thing.
I mean, some people, very few and far between people want to wake up and trip every day. A lot of like the really super hippy dippy, you know, festival kids I've seen trip for like a week straight, which is madness, legitimately madness.
Yeah.
But I've never wanted to wake up from a trip or come out of a trip and want to do it again.
Well, you
know, not for a period of time at least.
What kept me from like doing like, you know, that like frequently and like anything like that at all was the, you know, the stuff that we were getting around here, because this place Medford is like known for like Methford, you know.
It's got Medford is really bad, by the way.
Yeah.
Well, as far as meth and drugs go.
Yeah, we don't have the, you know, nickname Methford for no reason. And a lot of the, you know, stuff that they had here was just kind of laced. So you would get like, you know, cocaine with laced with like meth and stuff.
Oh, that's,
like,
that's big.
And one of the big ones is like Molly, and that would be laced with like meth and stuff. And like 100%. People would just have like this powder that they wouldn't know what, you know, what it was or what to look for in their stuff. And they would just, you know, take the person's word for it and literally could be like tied or something, you know?
Yeah, no, that's really messed up, man. That was happening on the East Coast, but not as much, because for some reason on the West Coast, you guys have a ton of meth. Everybody loves meth.
I don't know what it is.
It's so weird. Like, when I grew up, I don't even think I could find meth. I'm sure I could, but it wasn't readily available. Heroin was, which is pretty bad, but it doesn't make you tweak out and, like, do what meth does. And, I mean, it's still bad. I mean, really bad. But we didn't have as much of that in our, you know, laced into our Molly and shit like that. But the few times that I've dabbled in stuff like that, I've always tested it. I could never just take something that somebody, you know, just pulled out of their pocket.
Yeah, see.
Well, besides
were,
that one
you
night.
Were smart, right? Nah. You were smart about it, at least. Some people would, like, you know, like I said, just take it, you know, take the word for it and do it right then and there.
I'd rather just stick to the psychedelics every now and then.
That's what I'm saying.
That's, yeah. Let's keep it safe here.
That's what, let's keep it relatively PG-13.
Safe. Yeah. That's awesome, though, man. So, is there anything else you want to tell the Hustle Cannabis listeners out there about the cannabis industry or advice or anything?
Basically, don't be negative. Obviously, give a lot of positivity.
Yeah, because I know you're real big. This guy pushes a lot of positivity and spirituality type stuff on his Instagram, and is always a really uplifting kind of person. So he definitely knows what he's talking about.
Definitely, and that's like one of the other things that I wanted to do. Like I said, with the Instagram for Souls Green, is be able to create a culture inside Souls Green, through Souls Green, really. To completely just change the face of the way we look at cannabis, especially in 2018, because it has still like looked at as like this like hardcore drug,
yeah,
and all this. And like me and you were talking about how Reefer Madness, mm-hmm. you know, in the movie they said it was worse than heroin, and that's the movie that, you know, our grandparents saw.
It wasn't that long ago.
Yeah, and then they taught it to their kids, and taught it to their kids, who are essentially our parents.
Uh-huh.
And so that's why they're so like uptight about it and everything. But you know, honestly, it's like not a bad thing, honestly, and it brings a lot of positivity, and it's like Bob Marley said, it's the healing of a nation.
Hey, my boy's rocking the Bob Marley shirt right now. I'm a huge reggae fan.
Honestly, yeah. And then it just came actually to the Brit Festival right here, not recently, and they played it. Stephen Marley did.
Oh, dude, I love those guys. Right? Actually, he is a... can I say that? Yeah, I can say that. He's an investor in High Times now.
What?
Yeah.
Okay,
so,
okay.
Pretty cool stuff. Hopefully I can meet him one day.
Right.
I think it's Stephen, Damien. I don't know. Anyway, one of the Marleys. Well, the Marleys like High Times.
All right. Surprise, surprise.
Yeah. But all right, man. That's cool. You want to tell the crowd where they could find you as far as social media goes, whatever else?
Yeah, I mean, basically find the Souls Green Instagram. That's just
how do you
Souls
spell Green.
SOLSGREEN.
Oh, it's three E's?
Yeah, I just noticed that today, okay. Actually. And then for my personal one, it's The Real Gustavo Camargo, right? GUSTAVOCAMARGO, and just on Facebook, obviously, my first and last name.
Awesome. I'll put it in the description, too, because that's kind of hard to spell out. When we started this podcast, it actually took me a minute or two to get that name, right. Camargo, because I honestly haven't heard that name before.
Yeah.
It's Mexican?
Yep, Gustavo Camargo.
Camargo. I like it. Combatus Camargo. Cool.
Ray Camaro.
All right, man. I really appreciate you coming on the show.
Boom. Appreciate you.
I know it's been a while, guys. I apologize about that. Life's been crazy, super busy, but we're back at it.
Dude, it sounds like you're getting it all back together. So, I mean, more frequently, better.
Yeah, man. I'm working on it. I had a 3-month bumpy road with the life situations that you know about. I'm not going to elaborate, but, you know, got the new job, the super high intense job that I was really trying to do well at. And then at the same time, going through a lot of life issues. But everything's good now. Happy to be back. And yeah, as always, keep hustling, stay positive.